It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I like to make sound effects when I push buttons. So, I want to talk about a video I saw. I don't know if you've seen it, but you sent it to me, so I'm assuming you probably did.
Okay.
Do you want to explain this video?
What video? What is it?
It's the Burmese one. It's the Myanmar one.
Oh, crap. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I had to remember.
Sometimes a video comes along that perfectly encapsulates our time and life. And then you fucking forget about it like a day later.
The thing is, I've sent a few of these videos to various people about a lot of different things in relation to that part of the world. I don't know how to explain it really. So this woman was filming was it kind of an instructional type thing? People watching?
I have since gained more detail, so maybe I should explain.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah, why don't you go ahead? Sorry.
The video, which at the time you sent it to me, there was no real confirmation. The way it's set up, it could easily be faked. Or
yeah,
it could easily be planned or things like that. Purported to be a PE instructor from Myanmar filming outdoors an exercise routine,
right,
like for class and things like that. Where she is filming and the time she happens to be filming was exactly when the recent military coup happened. So behind her, unnoticed by her, armored trucks and SUVs with like mounted weapons on them and things are pulling in to the gates behind her, and they're also ignoring her. And it is just so bizarre and like kind of scary and kind of funny and kind of also weirdly like artful in its way.
Yeah, it was so weird.
The way William described it was just very, very indicative of the times that we live in, which I think is true.
Yeah.
Since then, I have seen more reports of it. It seems to be more and more confirmed. And one of the big things that is she's done other videos in that spot. Like, that's just a very cool location to work in for her. And so she's done other ones there. But yeah, I don't know. I found it really fascinating. This is a problem for me. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about, and this is also indicative of the times, about this coup, because wasn't Myanmar already under a horrible oppressive regime? Has been for quite a while. So Is this people liberating them from the bad guys, or are these guys?
No, the person they've deposed is like a Nobel Prize winner, although there was some controversy with her because Muslims, I want to say a Muslim group was yes, attacked, and
Rohingya ethnicity or something like that,
correct? And yes, and she received a lot of criticism for not doing enough about it. Not, you know, she didn't like order it or something, but people expected she would do more about it, because, as I say, she's a Nobel Prize winner I wish I had thought about us talking about this, so I might have refreshed my memory on some things. My memory is so terrible lately. Oh my gosh, I can't even tell you. But anyhow, no, they weren't overthrowing what's regarded as an oppressive regime.
I think I'm just back behind, because the last I knew, they were under what was called a junta, and it was terrible, and it was one of the few countries, like, it's really messed up. But I'm like, I think that might have been during the W. Bush years. And so it might have gotten better, because I also saw a reference to one of these that this is the same military organization that took power in 2005. So maybe nobody bothered to report that Myanmar was like kind of under a nice government for a while, and I just had no idea. I don't know.
Well, again, it's not, I mean, as I said, I think before the oppression of that group, I think people felt like the country was heading in the right direction. This was a very celebrated leader. And what happened recently was they had elections, and she was, you know, reinstalled or, you know, reelected or whatever. But I didn't know anything about the elections being questioned or contested or anything else. But obviously, these military leaders are insisting that it was fraudulent. And so, you know, they're taking over. I honestly don't know a lot more than that. And I actually could sort of fallen behind on keeping up with Myanmar stuff. So I mean, I'm not even sure if I can't believe I don't even remember her name, but I don't remember if this woman sort of redeemed herself after all that scandal, because that's been a year or so ago. So I'm not really up on what's been going on over there anyway. So when I heard about the coup, because I did, right when it happened, there was breaking news, and some of the news feeds I have are like, are news organizations based in that region. So I was seeing it like right as news organizations in the region were getting the news. I was really surprised. But then I asked myself, well, how surprised should I be? I haven't really been paying attention to what's been going on in that country for, you know, at least a year. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know why they might do that. But
so, very serious, dangerous news item that we don't understand. But funny video.
The video was so weird. If you know more
details about what's going on in Myanmar, please let us know in the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. I feel bad now. I feel like we were unprepared for this, because I'm the one who knew it was going to happen. So,
well, again, my memory lately has been really awful. The other day, I was in the kitchen, and Abby was in there, and she was talking about a person. Doesn't matter who the person is. But she said this person's name, and I said, I don't know who you're talking about. And she said the person's name again. And I said, I don't know who that is.
It was me.
And then she said who it was, like some fact about the person that I would know. And I stood there thinking for a second, that person's name isn't X, it's something else entirely. But I wasn't recognizing the words she was saying as the name of that person. Like, even when I knew who she was talking about, it seemed weird when she said their name, because it didn't seem to go together. Then later, she was talking about this person again and using that name, and it, you know, made sense now. And so then I said, did we talk about this person earlier? And it's like, I didn't understand why you were calling them their name. And she said, yeah, that happened. So then I tried to remember that moment where we were having that conversation, and I could remember the conversation, but I couldn't remember what I thought she said. Like, every time in my memory, when it got to the point of her saying the person's name, I couldn't like visualize or audioize or whatever you do, her saying the name, either the correct name or an incorrect name. It was just like a blank or something.
I got to talk to your wife, because I think we need to put you and Trish in a home.
That was a new one for me. That's never happened. Well, maybe it has, and I just don't remember.
I sadly, I have worse. regarding my wife.
Oh, it's just so weird.
From last night. So, during the week, we wake up at 7:30. It's just, we both happen to wake up at that time. It works good for her getting work, and I start things, and, you know, because in general, it's bad if you're in the same bed and one alarm goes off and the other, like, we wake up at 7:30 on weekdays. At night, I go to bed 11, 11:30. I want to get 8 hours of sleep. Trish goes to bed earlier than that. Often she doesn't go to sleep yet. I have pills to take at night, including some pills to help me sleep. I take them at 9 o'clock because they say good an hour before bed, but I found it usually takes more like 2 hours for them to really kick in on me. So I take them at nine and I figure 11, 11:30, I'll start being tired. Pretty consistent. And you know me with my scheduling and stuff. So it's consistent. And I also have to do my daily injection for the diabetes. And I just happen to do that also then. So at 9 o'clock, whatever I'm doing, I go back, I take my last couple of pills, and I stab myself, as I say. So frequently, Trish and I are doing something out here, watching TV, whatever. Eventually we'll be like, oh, we'll be done. So then she sort of does her own thing. While I'm doing something, like I'm playing video games and she's on her tablet or whatever. Often at 9 o'clock, quite often I would say, I say, 9 o'clock, time to stab myself. Do you want to be tucked in now? Because I tuck in my wife. And usually she says yes. Sometimes she's like, no, I'm going to hang out for a while. That's fine, whatever. And sometimes for whatever reason, she was already back there. Usually this is what I say. It's 9 o'clock, time to stab myself. Would you like a tuck in? So, yesterday, I don't remember what brought up the topic, but she said, you know what I just recently figured out? And I said, what? She said, you take your last pills at 9 and then come to bed at 11. And I said, yeah. I said, it's not always 11. It's sort of 11 to 11:30. Yeah. She's like, yeah, but you have a schedule. I was like, so you just thought I just sort of did it whenever? I just sort of took my pills whenever I felt like and came to bed whenever I felt like? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, I say it out loud. Like, I know you're not used to paying attention to what time it is because I have broken her. She's never been good with time. I am so obsessed. This is true, a lot of friends of mine too. They are worse about time and scheduling because of me, because I pick up so much slack whether they want me to or not, that like they're atrophying. I'm like, this is more like you don't understand the concept of time, because I say like every night it's 9 o'clock, time to go stab myself, which also is when I take my pills. She apparently just hadn't put that together, and I'm like, wow, this is bad. So yeah, I think you and her, we're gonna have to put you in home.
Where, well, when I don't get enough
chart of the names of people, and somebody can give Trish a big clock right in her face.
When I don't get enough sleep, I have the weirdest. I mean, I have memory problems anyway, as everybody knows. But when at some point in the last, I don't know, decade or so, maybe decade and a half, I have pretty regular sleep problems when I didn't have any sleep problems before. And if I have a couple days where I have trouble sleeping, I'll start having very specific kinds of memory problems. I mean, I've had them on the podcast where I'm talking and I'll just stop because I don't remember the word that, you know, that I was going to say next.
Yeah, I don't know if I have that, because if I have a couple of days with really bad sleeping, I just go back to sleep. Even when I had a job, I'd call in sick, because 2 nights in a row of very poor sleep, I'm a disaster. Like, I cannot function. I just sleep. So I might have memory problems, but I don't give myself a chance to find out. I think you should really consider solipsism. I think you should really consider the possibility that this is all an elaborate dream you're having, and that none of the rest of us exist.
Why would I do that?
Because I think it's likely. The way your life goes, I think it's very likely.
What are you talking about?
We are all some sort of self-delusion of yours. Because from your perspective, a lot of shit just doesn't make sense. And when you describe it to me, it doesn't make sense either. And I think it's a lot of it follows sort of dream logic. I think we might all just be in your head.
No.
Okay.
I mean,
it's just a theory. What would I know? I'm just in your head.
I mean, I'm a pretty creative person, but I just don't think I could make you up.
There's a point. God, how many cats do I own? I mean, the answer is none. How many cats own me? All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world. It's all in William's head. Ooh. I don't know why I'm making ghost noises. I'm Tony.
And I'm the aforementioned William.
Hey, you remembered. Good job.
And this is episode 516. And we have officially gone a year without having a mystery episode.
Yes, the last mystery episode was a year ago. Because now we do this. And so really we would only need a mystery episode if one of us was so sick we couldn't sit and look at the screen. And we're just banking that's not going to happen. The alternative is we make a mystery episode and then we don't use it for like 4 years. Which, now that I'm saying it out loud, has some appeal.
If I was still driving over there, though, we definitely would have needed one today.
Yeah. This is not, oh my God.
It's pretty bad.
It is not good weather here, people. Mm-mm. Those of you who aren't here, so we've had dumps of snow. It has been a fairly mild winter, but we have had some decent snowfall periodically. And in between, we haven't had a whole heck of a lot of above freezing. So it's not a problem, except we're running out of places to put the snow.
Yeah.
Like parking lots are crazy now with all the plow piles. And I'm losing places to shovel it.
Yeah.
Like when you got your driveway and there's always the sort of humps on the side, because that's where it's like they're so tall now. Putting out the trash cans is a pain in the butt. But now it appears we're heading into proper winter, which I'm so unhappy about. So starting today, first, we wasn't supposed to happen until tonight, but we got a big old honking snowstorm and several inches of snow. I was out in the middle of it, which was terrible. It was sideways snow, visibility was like a block. It was terrible, and it dumped a bunch. And now the temperature is going to drop to ridiculously cold, and it's just going to stay that way for like ever.
Yeah,
like forecast as far out as I trust it, it's all cold as shit. And we're gonna get a little more snow this weekend and Monday. Oh, gonna be super cold. I believe specifically Saturday night and Sunday night, the lows are -11. I've been very pleased that this year, it seems like my seasonal affective disorder hasn't really been a thing. And I think there's a variety of reasons for that. But one of them is winter's been pretty mild. And that's about to change. So I am not looking forward to this.
Yeah, when it gets really cold, that's not good.
Yeah. It's pretty outside right now, though.
Yeah, I mean, I love winter. I love the snow. But the things I don't like is when it gets too cold and, you know, you have to some people in their houses not having enough heat, and, you know, and so that becomes dangerous. And also, if you have an ice storm or something, things are excessively icy, that's also very dangerous. Yeah. I don't like that. But
also genocide. I don't like genocide. Interesting time to be silent. William unwilling to come out on either side of the fence vis-a-vis genocide. Noise was one of my cats deciding to be the litter box police. He likes to be over there and everything's not quite right, so he has to like work at it. So, once again, William may or may not be in favor of genocide. Anyway, how was your week?
It's good. Still playing the game. We've only got
Spider-Man game?
No. No, the game with Dave.
Oh, okay.
That's fun. Not very many left. I decided I was going to put my the little gingerbread man or gingerbread person game that I sort of tried to make on my website so people could like have a look at it without having to ask me for it. So then they'll feel on the spot to say something to me about it. I tell people it's out there, they can just look at it and they can pretend they never saw it if they think it's terrible.
Oh no, we've already scheduled a private meeting to just rip it to shreds. But we won't have to tell you about it.
It's not all out there yet, but I was trying to rush to get it done before this, but it didn't work. So I have to keep working at it, and then it'll be out there probably, well, I don't know, tomorrow sometime.
So go to aethertheater.com / gingerbread role playing game that's not done, but mostly done. System agnostic.
I think but on probably the first works page, best
for Fate / pdf.org.
No, just if you go, well, there's no point going there now, but tomorrow
or go there now.
Monday or whatever. On the front page, there's
not on the weekend. His website's down on the weekend. You can go tomorrow or Monday.
I just don't know when I'm going to have it all out there, but the front page has just a bunch of, you know, categories, and you go into the category for games or whatever.
There's a bunch of shit on there. Go there as soon as you're done listening here and just look at all the other shit. And by the time you're done, it'll probably be there. There's a lot of stuff there.
Maybe there is a lot of stuff there.
Some weird short fiction. What else, awesome films.
Seems like we watched some
cool stop motion webcomic.
I mean, there's not really that much to talk about. I've had a really rough day for my mood. It was really bad. Then it improved. And then right before this, it got bad again.
Because you were like, oh crap, I'm going to have to go talk to that guy. I get it.
No, it's not that. I heard some news. I won't get into the details of it, but it was like very distressing news. Not for me personally, but for somebody else. And so I was... It was the kind of distressing that's like doesn't make you sad or depressed, but it makes you mad, makes you angry. It's like, why are things like this happening in the world kind of thing? So yeah. But I mean, mostly though, I mean, you know that I have had other bad news this week. A cousin of mine passed away. And some of it was related to COVID, not all of it. He was already having health problems, as a lot of people who are dying from this disease do. My first cousin too, but once removed, with my mom's first cousin. So we thought he was getting better because he was on a ventilator, and then he was off the ventilator, but he didn't make it. So he died the day after his birthday, as a matter of fact. And actually, in a weird coincidence, his parents are also deceased, but they both died in February also. So I thought that was really interesting. But I didn't know him. I mean, I, as I was telling you, I knew him mostly as I was growing up, because mom is from Greenfield, Iowa, which was like an hour and a half from where I grew up. So we don't, you know, we didn't really see my mom's side of the family that often. Although when we did, when we were over there, he and his family were almost always also there. He had kids kind of our age and stuff. And I didn't just talk to his kids and hang out with his kids. I would talk to him. So I'd say I knew him pretty well growing up. But then when I left home and I, you know, came out here really, because this is where I came to college. Mm-hmm. Then I didn't really talk to him after that. Saw him at mom's funeral, but I mean, you know. But still, it was, you know, like I said, he was getting better and we were really, you know, glad for that. And then suddenly he just didn't pull through. So that's the first person in my, you know, sort of direct orbit who's passed away from something related to COVID.
Yeah. A friend of the family's dad got it. Actually, they tested positive for it, and the friend of the family had been visiting them, so they had to get tested, and they came back negative, thank goodness. But then that same day, father died. So,
I mean, I've known people who had friends or relatives who passed away, but it, like in my family is what I mean. I haven't, if someone else has passed away and cousins and all that, I haven't heard. This is the first I've heard. So that really sucks.
Thousands of people every day gonna hit something.
Yeah. Eventually. I mean, it's like, you know, to me, when I think about the vaccine and how quickly or slowly it's rolling out or whatever, I don't tend to think that there's a whole lot that can be done about it. You know, like it's only going to come out so fast. And there are going to be things that slow it down that seem dumb and unnecessary, you know, to us. But we've all had jobs where dumb, unnecessary things happened. And nobody wanted that dumb, unnecessary thing to happen. It just happened. So I don't tend to think that I know how fast it should be happening or how bent out of shape I should be if it's not happening fast enough. But even if it was happening as fast as it could possibly happen, it wouldn't be fast enough, obviously, you know. I mean, I have no idea when I'm going to be able to get it. No idea at all.
Me neither. The UK is currently the fastest there is right now. And their very optimistic estimate is that they should be all set by the fall.
I mean, it's like, what are we going to do? You know, dad tested positive and his wife, they got over it with mild symptoms. He didn't even have to be hospitalized, thank God, but that doesn't mean he can't get it again. He underwent a treatment that antibody treatment or whatever it is. And I guess that worked for him. But my sister, who works in healthcare, I think I've said, she said after he gets that treatment, he has to wait 45 days to get vaccinated, and he needs to get vaccinated because he could just get infected again.
Yeah.
So it's like, man, and I don't know when he's going to be able to. I mean, I think he's in a high risk group or whatever, but
he's not that old though. Yeah. Most places weirdly don't seem to be taking this country. Don't seem to be taking risk into consideration so much as age and occupation, which.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, occupation. Right.
I get a lot of that. And I mean, I've got a friend who is my age, who's a teacher, and he got vaccinated, and I mean, I'm willing to wait, mostly because I have the convenience that I don't, like, my preventative care is I just don't go anyplace. I don't see anyone.
Right.
I stay in my house all the time. I mean, I'm not even shopping anymore. I get groceries, I pull up outside and they stick them in the back of my car.
Yeah. But I mean,
not everybody has that option and not everybody's willing to do it.
Yeah, I've been so scared since this whole thing started that Dad would get sick. You know, and thankfully, you know, when he got it, it wasn't severe, but that doesn't mean the next time will work out that way. And then, you know, this cousin of mine, it was just a year older than Mom, you know, so, you know, I mean, this, what happened to him is what I'm afraid would happen to Dad if he got it. Although again, my cousin had other problems that like my dad doesn't have. So, you know, there was some comorbidity there or whatever, but still it's, I don't know. It causes, and probably for a lot of other people, I'm sure, just causes this constant undercurrent of tension, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's just so, how long can a person, you know, I mean, the thing is, there are people all over the world who have to deal with, not just with the pandemic, but like with, there's war or there's poverty or there's famine. And that's what they're in, a constant state of some kind of tension and stress. And, you know, studies have shown the human body is not meant to just be like that. And it can really take its toll. And, you know, for someone like me who lives in such a privileged situation, obviously I'm going to be able to, you know, handle it probably for a very long time, considering I can, you know, have plenty of food and shelter and all kinds of other things. But, you know, even that, those advantages are going to run out eventually, especially if I have any kind of, you know, predisposition to, you know, mental problems, which I might have. I mean, my family has a history of terrible depression, so I don't know. It's just a lot to think about, you know, and it's a lot to you. It's like every day is this kind of emotional roller coaster. I mean, even if you avoid the news and political stuff, you know, you hear from your family that, oh, you know, so-and-so died from such and such. And you're like, oh my gosh, it just doesn't end.
If you're just joining us for the first time.
I'm so sorry. This is how I feel right now.
I mean, it was nice of you to visit. Have a good day.
I'm sorry. It was just right before this, you know, I heard about this thing and it made me mad. And so that just made all of the emotions, you know, like I couldn't, a lot of times I kind of psych up because I like doing this. I like talking to you. I like talking to our listeners, but like right beforehand, there was like, you know, just a gut punch. And it's like,
don't sweat it. None of us are real. It's fine.
Man, if that were true, I would have a
better... You're only hurting yourself, which, you know, we all really knew anyway.
Okay.
So I mean, I don't know that specifically was an answer to how has your week been, but I'm hesitant to ask that now, given all of that.
Well, I mean, that's just... You know, whatever else happened in the week, that's what's been happening pretty much every week for nearly a year now, right? That thing.
Yeah, not yet a year.
Yeah.
That's been hitting me. I'm like, really? We haven't hit a year yet? It feels like forever.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it
Yeah, I'm not even that's what I'm thinking saying. About vaccine. I have a doctor's appointment in mid-May. At that time, I figure I'll ask my doctor what's up with vaccine situation. So I'm hoping by mid-May, he at least will have some semblance of how/when I might. I mean, my in-laws got their first dose. I'm very happy about that. And my mom hasn't bothered yet. Again, my mom never leaves her house, so
How's she doing? I mean, I always intend to ask how she's doing, and then I stupidly forget.
Sometimes good, sometimes bad. I mean, I'm still not worried about her, but you know, she's still grieving. Still slowly but surely working on getting the house all cleaned up to sell it and move back into the valley. So that's her prime focus these days.
Yeah, I mean, like all through the holidays, I was thinking about her because, you know, for obvious reasons, the first holiday season after you lose someone is really rough for you know, most.
But well, and his birthday's right in the middle of that, so.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think about her a lot, even though I forget to ask.
He hardly ever thinks of you, so it's fine.
How was your week? Talk about something bright and cheery after I brought everybody down.
It was okay. Like I said, the depression's kicking in a little bit, but I'm doing things to like keep myself busy and stuff like that. We tried watching two new sitcoms that have just come out. I got a lot of buzz about them. One starring Mayim Bialik called Call Me Cat. And one starring Ted Danson and Holly Hunter called Mr. Mayor. Did you hear of either of these?
I mean, they sound familiar, I guess. Yeah.
I like Mayim Bialik, so I was a little bit pleased about that. And the whole shtick on that one was that she breaks the fourth wall a lot, which I know is a little hacky these days, but I enjoy it. I have fun with that. So we watched the pilot of that, and we have a thing about, you know, you have to give a show two episodes because pilots are often messy. So, you know, you need to get... We broke our rule for this one because it was so bad.
Mm.
It was an episode of a mediocre CBS sitcom from 1995 with all the mindset and jokes associated with it.
Wow.
It had very strong vibes of the old Kathy comic in a way. Just boring shit jokes and... really awful. Well, that was no fun. However, Mr. Mayor is kind of fun. It's co-created by Tina Fey, and you can really feel that. Like, it feels like a show written by the people who wrote 30 Rock. Like, it has that vibe to it. And it's really fun. I mean, it's not, I'm not going to live and die by it, but it's entertaining and it's cute. And Danson is a treasure. And Holly Hunter, of course, is amazing. So it's really fun for that. So that was fun. We watched a few movies. Actually, I watched a bunch of movies. Had something weird happen. So as you know, I watch a crap ton of shitty horror movies. Kind of my jam. I don't usually talk about them because they're crappy. Once in a blue moon... get one that I'm like, I think this actually is a good movie, at least in that, like, it was different. It was thought-provoking. It was, you know, it was actually scary, things like that. Weirdly, since we last spoke, there were two of them.
Wow, two.
To be fair, that's probably out of, like, six that I watched, and the other ones were really terrible. But the night after we podcast last time, the night before, I had watched a movie, I think, called Followed. That was a YouTube star who was trying to make a name for himself by going to a haunted hotel and then, you know, terrible shit happens. And it was awful. And then I realized that I had been mixing it up with a different movie in my queue that was also about a YouTube star fighting ghosts and stuff. And I was like, what the hell? Let's watch the other shitty one. Like, back to back, this will be fun. This is the new generation. They aren't ghost hunters anymore. They're influencers. And somehow... that feels even better to watch them get killed by demons. This one was called Death of a Vlogger. It might actually be good. I'm definitely glad I saw it. It's out on Amazon Prime for free. It's, No, there's some things I sort of don't want to give away. It is very much set up as a documentary, and they consult experts and things like that. And it's about a YouTuber who encounters some supernatural stuff and things happen. I think it's very original in that it sort of works. You won't be able to really say what happened necessarily. And it juxtaposes the sort of supernatural horror elements with legitimate critique of social media obsession and sort of internet celebrity and the paths that takes and things like that. And it's very, I found it very interesting that way, because like I said, you'll never, it's definitely one of those, like, you decide what happened. People make strong arguments in both ways. And I found it very interesting that way. It's also fun for me in that it's Scottish. Like, the main character is, it's in Glasgow, and basically every character involved is Scottish. They might have had one or two of the experts brought in or whatever that wasn't Scottish, but and that's very rare to see, in my opinion. It was weird. I looked it up. So the writer and director and editor, I think, also plays the lead, which on paper, horrible idea. But it was good. And I looked it up, and he's actually directed other things before. So found it weird that he was doing the whole writing, directing, starring thing for this. Because he, I mean, it's low budget stuff. But he is a legitimate director of features before. It was interesting. So Death of a Vlogger, you might want to check it out. By you, I mean people. I don't know that William would want to. The other one is on Netflix. And I found this interesting. It's called Cadaver. Netflix, it's with a C, like we would expect. The original title of the film is Cadaver with a K. It is a Norwegian film. And it is technically a post-apocalyptic film. It's set after there's been worldwide nuclear war, and people that are left are, you know, scrambling for food and things. And you're in the city, it's all burned out and everything. There's some survivors, and there's a hotel on the hill, and whoever lives there does a play. It's one night. This guy comes down from there and is a broker selling tickets, talking about this exclusive show that is happening at the hotel. And it comes with a meal, which draws a lot of people's attention. And so we get this from the POV of a husband, wife, and daughter. And they go to this hotel, and it's really nice and fancy. And they have an actual meal, which they haven't eaten well in a long time. And then there's the play. The play is not on a stage. The audience gets these drum show masks, and anybody not wearing a mask is part of the show, and anybody wearing a mask is part of the audience. And you just follow the characters you think are interesting throughout the hotel. I've actually heard of people doing plays like this before, and I think it's a really cool idea. So there's different stories are going on, and like the characters will split up, and you follow the one whose story you want to follow. And then, of course, it's a horror movie, so things are not what they appear and all this. And I will admit, I was hoping for a more original ending than I got. But the whole thing ends up really playing a lot with the idea of humanity and perception and reality and things like that, which is something that I'm fascinated in. And it's also just the production on it is really good. And because it's in Norwegian with subtitles, I think the acting is really good. As we've established, when it's in a foreign language, I can't tell. It could be bad. But I thought it was good because I don't know Norwegian. Sounds very similar to German, but not quite. So yeah, you can check out that as well. Speaking of perception versus reality and all this, last week, or maybe the week before, you mentioned The Truman Show. Or maybe I mentioned The Truman Show. The Truman Show came up. And it came up that you and your wife are big fans of it and have seen it many times.
That is correct.
I've never
when
seen
we
it.
Were, when we went down to Florida, we went specifically to find the place that it was filmed and all, you know, some of the places
I had never seen it. I never was really interested. I'm not a big Jim Carrey fan, and I especially was not interested in seeing him do something dramatic. And the premise didn't feel like something to hold the whole movie for me at the time, and I just sort of never did it. Like, in my head, I sort of just knew what that movie would be like. After you were talking about it, I was thinking about it, and perception and how it navigates reality and, you know, being in a simulation and things like that, narratively, are things that are very big for me and things that I both write about and read about. And I was like, probably have kind of a responsibility to see this movie. Like, I feel like I probably should see this movie. And I mentioned that to Trish, and she's like, I think I saw it when I was younger, but yeah, we could do that. And then one night we decided we want to watch a movie. We were browsing through, and it came up on Amazon, and it's free with Prime. We were like, let's do it. We watched it. So I watched it. How does it? How was your week? What did you think of it, Tony?
Oh, you want me to say that?
Yes. Hmm. You don't get how conversation works.
Usually I just sit here while you talk and talk and talk and talk. And I just get to sit here and listen.
We should at least feign dialogue. Come on. if people see the strings, it's not good. It's interesting. And I'm going to say up front in the conversation that I'm about to initiate here, or that I'm about to force William to initiate, may spoil some stuff from Truman Show. And I have two things to say about that. One, it's almost 23 years old. And two, it's not, there's not a lot of surprises in Truman Show. It's not a movie about a guy whose whole life is reality TV, and then he finds out the truth, and then he hangs out in the reality TV some more at the end. It knows how you think it's gonna go, like in broad strokes. Like, you don't finish going, wow, I really didn't see the plot going that way. No, like, yeah. So, you know, if you're worried about spoilers for Truman Show, deal. I think it is a good film. I am not sure. I don't want to say it hasn't aged well, because it's not like offensive or anything now. And its message is still clear. I think it's a classic. Is, I think, a very good word for it. I think it was a very big deal for the time, and it was trudging through new territory at the time. I think it doesn't necessarily hold up, and there may be things that have covered this area better since then. It was made at a peculiar time, because both obviously technologically, but also socially, what is being dealt with in there has changed drastically. Like, not only obviously is the technology there, this would operate differently, but just the world we've come into where everybody films themselves all the time and stuff sort of changes the focus of how this works. I will say, it being from the late 90s, it treats some really horrific shit with sort of cute little whimsy. And I'm not saying the whole movie should have been a horror movie, but there's some stuff in this that's like, the very ending is fucked up. So I'm like, he walks out the door and then the credits go, and I'm like, and he's permanently broken forever. Like, he's institutionalized from now on. And that last line, there was a very interesting reaction, but like, Harris's character is evil on a scale that we don't deal with. And everybody's cheering at the end. All the people watching at home are cheering, and I'm like, and you were all complicit in his slavery. He had, by all rights, should absolutely hate every goddamn one of you. Like, there's just a lot. I mean, there's some serious stuff in there. I also had the problem with the logistics. At the same time as I'm dealing with these ethical issues and not thinking they were necessarily handled well, I'm like, if I was going to buy a baby and imprison it forever and make it think it was in its own little reality the whole time, I would do it way better than these guys do it. Like, there's a lot of mechanisms that could have made this more secure, more interesting, lots of stuff. And not all, even in 1998, it's not all just technological leaps, but just certain aspects. I'm like, and I think I could write the Truman Show much better. And I don't mean the movie. I mean, the TV show within the movie has some terrible dialogue that I could have written much better. So there is some weird stuff there, but it's very thought-provoking to the degree that Trish and I talked about it for quite a while afterwards. And it has some really brilliant touches to it. There's a lot, I say it doesn't take some of the horrific elements too seriously, but it does acknowledge them often in subtle ways that I found was very interesting. There's a bit when we're going to interview Harris's character, the main guy, Christoph, and the interviewer is like, you know, thank you so much for letting us do this or whatever. I appreciate that this is a rare opportunity because I know how much you value your privacy. And Trish and I independently were just like, and we're not even going to touch on the irony of that statement. There's no way the movie didn't know. Like, that was on purpose. And that was fascinating. The fact that throughout the film, we are seeing people watching the show is brilliant. We get so much perspective from the audience members and their reactions watching it as a soap opera, while also knowing what the reality of it is. And that's really kind of fascinating. Yeah, it's very thought-provoking, but yeah, I think it is a great classic upon whose shoulders others have stood and sort of gone beyond. But I don't know if you have any response to this. It's clearly a treasured film of yours, so I don't know if that makes it difficult to drill down into necessarily.
Well, I'm a fan of Peter Weir's in general. I mean, I like this movie. I like Mosquito Coast. I like, Witness was good, I thought. I think it's hard to really, if a person's never seen the movie before, they're going to contextualize it in modern terms. They're going to see it as like a kind of a commentary on reality television, which I don't think it was so much at the time.
No, because it wasn't a thing. We actually went to look up like when those things started, and technically like the real world had happened, like not even Survivor or anything. So this is before that era.
Yeah, I mean, he was riffing on that phenomenon, saying, well, what if we did this? But that was clear. It's just as clear to me, and especially if you're familiar with some of his other work, that was just a framing device, really. But I think a lot of people today, they wouldn't be able to help it. They wouldn't be able to help but see it as some kind of a, all about being a commentary on reality television.
I want to give him credit for maybe being a little predictive, though. I think maybe he was on. Sure. I think maybe he saw something. But no, I agree with you otherwise. Absolutely.
I think the reason it resonated with me personally, and I think Abby's the same. I think we both sort of got the same thing out of it, which is one of the reasons why we liked it so much, was because to us, it was a commentary on the pressures of social control. It's really more in the vein of like the Matrix, right?
Can you repeat how in the what you started with, because you had a little blip, and so it sounded like you said the pressures of social troll, which I don't think is what you said.
Yeah, social control. It's, you know, like in the Matrix, in those parts of the Matrix, we're talking about, you know, how the Matrix used to be like a heaven, but humans rejected it, and characters saying that, you know, ignorance is bliss. He wants to go back into the Matrix and not remember anything. You know, those aspects of the Matrix that were sort of addressing how, you know, serving as a metaphor for how we in our society our constructs of, you know, certain norms, but also, you know, we've talked about, you know, euphemisms and all these little ways that hierarchies try and to control and succeed in controlling. So while we're watching it, you know, we're paying attention to how he's constantly being told there's nothing else to discover.
Yes,
how they're trying to make him afraid of the water.
They have instilled trauma in him in order to make it easier for them to be able to keep him in place. That was
right. But then
that's the thing. That's amazing to me, and not treated with the gravity I would have hoped for it.
Well, when I watched it, you know, I could relate to it, metaphorically speaking. I could relate to, oh yeah, I mean, this is, you know, these are the times in my own life when, because it you're right, it's kind of treated as a joke when he talks about he wants to be an explorer and the teacher says, oh, you're too late, everything's been discovered. But the fact is, most people who have even just sort of casually mused about the possibility of doing something even a little bit out of the ordinary from what most people do for like work, like, oh, I might write a novel, or I might go out to California and see if I could be an actor or something. You know, people who have those types of thoughts or aspirations are, I mean, they're almost constantly told, no, that can't happen. No, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not like I've had, you know, big aspirations or anything, but I, at that time, there were lots of, I'd had lots of experiences, and Abby had too, of people, you know, being discouraging about things that, like, neither one of us had ever said we wanted to be an Academy Award winner or anything, but it's just amazing how many things in culture and how many people, you know, people who are supposed to really let you, you'll confess the most modest dream and they'll crush it, you know.
And, to take a page from what you said talking about gaming before, we are very strongly encouraged to stay in our lane. Often from birth.
So well, and of course then it starts to relate to specific cultural roles, like gender roles or race types of things. So, you know, that's just how we both sort of saw it, as a metaphor for a lot of different things like that. And the most important line for me in the whole thing was when Christoph was talking to that, you know, that woman who called in and was complaining about him being a prisoner or whatever.
Yeah.
And then Christoph says, look, you know, if his was more than just this vague ambition, you know, he implied that Truman kind of knew he was in a prison or a cage, and he was happy about it, more or less. And
I find that horrendous, like I find that the most evil line in the whole film, because it's so much, it's not my responsibility. If he wanted it bad enough.
Yeah.
Like, that's I'm what he just said. Here. That's to me, said. It's a weird flip side of people who abuse someone and say, you're making me do this. It's a version of that. It's like, I'm not ruining your life, because if it really mattered, you'd stop me.
Yeah. Well, and in the context of the film, it turns out to be true that Christoph didn't bear any responsibility, but it turned out to be.
It did matter, and there was nothing that could stop him.
Yeah. That
arguably, he was willing to die rather than not break free.
Right. And again, if you look at it very literally, it's all just horrific or whatever else. But if you're looking at it more metaphorically, and to me, it was very inspiring. And I remember when I watched it, you know, and again, it was reminding me of all the things that I felt like in my own life were artificial constructs to prevent me from my lane. But also, you know, thinking a lot like this character, I don't have to settle for that. You know, I don't, painful. It's painful and it's awful, and shame on them for doing this. But also, I don't have to just allow it, especially when I do have the support of, I knew Abby at that time, I know my family. And since then, people, I met you and, you know, Jazz, especially since I do have support from people who, you know, aren't, you know, prone to just try to, you know, kick me when I'm down or whatever. Yeah, there's no, and I guess I feel that way about, you know, all of us. I know how hard it is in the world these days, as I was just saying at the beginning of the podcast, but, you know, we can all together get this. And the Christophs in our world who like to think that they're in control, or that they should be in control, or that it's in everybody's that they're in control, they're wrong, obviously. And it's hard to fight them, but, you know, it's worth fighting them, even if in the end we don't win. It's important to push back, and maybe we will win. Or maybe we won't win, but someone after us will win. You know, it's all very important.
I think this may hit on the thing of, you were able to put yourself in the main character's position and empathize well with him. Whereas I was not, for a couple of reasons. I mean, in general, I've been one of the lucky ones. I had ridiculously supportive parents, and was, you know, a white guy living on the West Coast in a relatively decent financial situation. I was always told I can be whatever I want and do whatever I want, and I'd be awesome at it. And in fact, later had trauma in my life where I reached adulthood and wasn't suddenly just rich and famous and didn't understand why. But also, it was Jim Carrey. Like, they talk about, you know, like having a main character, you want the neutral mask type, because everybody can sort of superimpose themselves upon them, which is why Keanu Reeves makes such a good leading man in these things, and it's why in all the great genre films, the actual hero is kind of boring and flat, whereas the quirky ones are always the side characters. So you put yourself in the role of Luke Skywalker, whereas Han Solo is too interesting for you to necessarily superimpose yourself. And the Pirates of the Caribbean, same thing. Jack Sparrow should be the side character, because you superimpose yourself on Orlando Bloom. There was no way in hell I could put myself on top of Jim Carrey, because he was still Jim Carrey. It was a very detailed character in a way that I didn't relate to at all. I think that was tricky for me. And again, that doesn't stop me from enjoying the movie. And I did enjoy the movie. And I think it is worth seeing. But it probably stops me from it resonating in the same way as it does with you. And again,
I saw it at a very particular time. And at a very particular time in my life. I was recently divorced and, you know.
I think it definitely should get credit as a classic and as a groundbreaking film. And I am glad I saw it, and it's given me things to think about.
It's the first film I ever saw Paul Giamatti in.
That was so weird. And like, your introduction to him is just like a panning across a group shot. And I was like, holy shit, that's baby Paul Giamatti. Actually, fucking everyone is in that movie. Like, Peter Krause, when I already think Peter Krause was a guy. Laura Linney, who was young enough that I was halfway through the movie before I figured out it was Laura Linney. The aforementioned Ed Harris. Like, yeah, there are so many people in that film, many of whom it was sort of before they hit it big, but that was a interesting thing. Yeah, and maybe Paul Giamatti. That was weird. Like 3-year-old Paul Giamatti.
But he was already good. I mean, it was a kind of a small part, a little bit of a bit part, but it's like, absolutely, you know, he was already standing his ground next to, yeah. It's like,
absolutely.
I wasn't surprised when he got more stuff.
In general, the film is well acted. There are weak spots, and it's noticeable because parts like Paul Giamatti's, which was like, you know, a dozen lines in the movie, are so tight that other places slip a little. I do recommend it. It is a product of its time.
Have you seen Mosquito Coast?
No, I think of myself as a Peter Weir fan. I couldn't name another film except the ones you said, which I haven't seen. So I might not be. I might suck.
I like Mosquito Coast. I'd say Witness is probably my least favorite of the films. And I'm having a hard time remembering some of the other ones I've seen too.
He did Porky's, right? Like his stuff. Was him.
I think he's really good.
That was him, right?
Yeah.
And the American Pie movies.
My memory's not working.
Hey, you remembered his name. That's a big thing. All right, we should draw something because we're already over time. So. Oh, Jeebus. This is from Azure Talon, and it is big. I'm really kind of surprised it is not abridged. Hat Masters of the Universe. If you were going to purchase a high-end collectible action figure, what character or characters would you choose? Signed, Azure Talon with the Kung Fu Grip.
That's really hard.
I can go first if you want.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. Never have. I don't do a lot of collectibles. I especially don't do collectible toys or action figures. I buy plenty of them to enjoy, to play with. Frequently I buy stuffed animals so that I can snuggle up with them and stuff like that. Like, I don't buy, you know, action figures that I put on the shelves, or, you know, every once in a while I look at them like, oh, that would be cool. But no, I don't ever really want any of them. I mean, I don't know if I, like, gun to my head, I gotta buy one. Somebody probably made a cool display figure of Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn. I think I'd like that. That'd be neat. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I don't think I would. I'm betting you have a lot of one you would.
I mean, you know, I'm really not much of a collector myself, but I have a whole bunch of things because other people very generously get them for me and I love them. I never buy them for myself, but
that's more a fiscal responsibility thing rather than not liking them.
Well, it's more of a, I just, for, for years, I mean, for as long, far back as I can remember, actually, I've just had this very minimalist approach to my stuff. Like, I'll just eventually get rid of stuff. I just don't like to have a lot of stuff. But I do love all these things. But there's two things I have right off the top of my head. One is Telltale, the earliest Telltale series, Batman series. There was a prototype bat suit that Batman had in the game. That it's the best bat suit. Like, if someone had a high end, action figure with that, that was the Telltale Batman with that prototype bat suit, that would be cool.
But that's actually, the thing I didn't really know you were that big of a Batman fan.
Funny. The first thing that popped into my head though wasn't that. It was Rocketeer. Like, a good Rocketeer action figure would be so
another cool. Movie I never saw.
Super cool. That's pretty good. Or really like a good something like that's a reproduction of a classic Buck Rogers or something like that would be cool. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
I guess I have had fantasy sculptures, like dragons. My in-laws started getting me fairy sculptures and I liked them. And in my in-laws, in Trisha's family, if you get a gift and you like it, then you keep getting that gift forever and ever and ever. So I got like 8 of those, and I used to actually display them places, but during some move they got packed up and I never unpacked them. Those are kind of fun.
I mean, a Wonder Woman figure would be cool, but you know, I'd have to really review different costumes and stuff, because the thing about Wonder Woman figures is they often, what they put her into wear often isn't very good.
Yeah, I love Wonder Woman. I pretty much at best don't care for her outfits. Like the ones that I like the best, I'm like, and it goes downhill from there. I've never liked Wonder Woman's outfits. Just, I mean, there's sexist issues in there as well, but also just the whole aesthetic has never done it for me. Just the red, white, and blue / red, white, and yellow.
Well, like,
never.
Right, but also there's...
The more Amazonian you get, the more I tend to be into it, but...
Yeah, and also the sculpts usually aren't very good. Their proportions are ridiculous. I mean, a lot of times the male figures are that way too, but somehow that doesn't offend me. The stuff with Wonder Woman, I'll get offended at how they do it. And I'm like, why did you do it like that?
William really likes his Superman with huge tits and long legs. No, I get you. Well, no, haven't you ever, there was a great comic about this one time where this man and woman are talking and the woman's like, I can't get into comics because there's all these ridiculous male, all the women are set up as these male erotic fantasies. And the guy's like, well, look at the male characters. They're set up as female erotic families. They're all, and she's like, no, that's also the male fantasy. And She's like, if I wanted a Batman that I thought would sexy, he'd be kind of slender and his lips would be a little heavier and he'd kind of, and she draws this whole thing and she shows it to him and he's like, sure makes me uncomfortable. And she says the greatest line. She says, welcome to the background radiation of my entire life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we can't say much about this because, first of all, it's a spoilerific thing, so you don't want to. But also, you haven't seen it yet because you have not caved yet and gotten Disney Plus. But you're going to any day now because the Muppet Show. And this is weird. I never expected to say this. Disney Plus limited series WandaVision is really good. And it's primarily really good because it's really unusual. It's different than anything else I'm seeing out there. And I really like that fact.
You probably saw this before because I think I had it at work.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I've never had it out of the box, though.
Collectible. That's the one you'd get if you didn't already have that one.
I think he probably got it in one of his trips to Disney. You know, Mick always goes down there.
Yeah, they do stuff like that at Disney. I've had a couple pictures of me in front of a 20-foot tall Kermit.
Yeah.
If you have Disney Plus, watch WandaVision. It's really, really cool. We are over time. And just want you all to remember that we're all figments of William's imagination. So up, William, have a good dream. Write in to the Magical Talking Hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, go to the blog and tell us what's going on in Myanmar, because we clearly don't know what the fuck's happening. themagicaltalkinghat.com. And in the meantime, tomorrow, when you wake up, say, what could I do today that would make William's dream the most interesting and rewarding for him? And then follow that as your life path from now on. Just every day, say, what would William like for me to do? That's a big set of initials for the bracelet, but you get the idea.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.